Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Katie Weaver, and Alice Bryant. Later, Jill Robbins and John Russell will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
A federal jury in the United States has found Dylan Roff guilty of killing 9 people at a South Carolina church in June 2015. The white supremacist was found guilty of 33 charges, including 9 hate crimes resulting in death and 3 hate crimes in an attempt to kill. Government lawyers said the 22-year-old Roff targeted the black church members during a Bible study meeting. The prosecutors said Roff waited until the church members closed their eyes to pray before shooting them. They called the shooter hateful and cowardly. 3 people survived the shooting at the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church. The trial lasted a week. Jurors announced their decision after discussing the case for just 2 hours. The same jurors will return to the court in early January to decide if Roff should be executed or sentenced to life in prison. I'm Katie Weaver.
Twenty-five countries executed 1,634 people in 2015. That is the highest number of executions worldwide in 25 years. The information comes from the rights group Amnesty International. 3 countries, Iran, Pakistan, and Saudi Arabia, carried out 89% of the executions last year, the group said. The numbers do not include executions in China. Amnesty International said it believes the Chinese government executes thousands of people every year, but the exact number cannot be learned because the government keeps that information secret, Amnesty said. In 2014, Pakistan resumed non-military executions after a terrorist attack on a school in Peshawar. The attack killed 144 people, mostly children. Last year, Pakistan executed 326 people for terrorist activities and other crimes, Amnesty International said. It said people tried and found guilty of murder and blasphemy were also put to death. Blasphemy is speaking or acting against the established religious beliefs. The Congress in the Philippines is considering President Rodrigo Duterte's proposal to reestablish the right to execute criminals. His plan would permit executions for crimes such as murder, rape, kidnapping, and drug offenses. When Duterte campaigned for the presidency, he promised to lead a war on crime, particularly drug crimes. He said he would bring back the death penalty. Executions were banned in 2006 by then-President Gloria Arroyo. Even without the death penalty, The Philippines National Police said Monday that nearly 6,000 people were killed as part of the government's war on drugs. The National Police said that 2,086 people were killed in police operations and 3,841 in vigilante killings over the past 6 months. On Monday, President Duterte said that when he was mayor of the Philippine city of Davao, he shot criminal suspects himself. Opposition to the killings and the proposed return of the death penalty is coming from the Roman Catholic Church. About 86% of the Philippines' 100 million residents are Catholic, according to the Asia Society's Center for Global Education. Catholic Archbishop Socrates Villadas said that the killing of people by the government goes against the Church's teachings. The United Nations said that as of 2014, 160 nations had banned the death penalty. In the past 2 years, Bangladesh, Fiji, Madagascar, and Suriname stopped executions, the UN reported. In the United States, 20 people have been put to death for their crimes in 2016, the lowest number in 25 years. The number comes from the Death Penalty Information Center, a nonprofit organization. Death penalty supporters say that people found guilty of horrible crimes should be put to death. They believe the sentence will act as a deterrent. By deterrent, they mean it might cause someone to decide against killing someone else. But opponents argue that a moral society does not put people to death. They say sometimes innocent people are found guilty of crimes. Once a person is executed, such mistakes cannot be fixed, death penalty opponents say. I'm Bruce Alpert.
China appears to have added weapons to man-made islands it built in the South China Sea, an American-based research group says. The Center for Strategic and International Studies says the weapons include anti-aircraft and anti-missile systems. The center published new satellite images to support its findings. The group said it has been studying construction on the islands, which are part of the Spratly Islands, since June and July. The Spratly Islands are made up of many small islands, known as islets, coral reefs, and other land formations in the South China Sea. China, Taiwan, and Vietnam each have claimed much of the area and its natural resources. Malaysia, the Philippines, and Brunei also claim parts of the waterway. China created the man-made land formations in the Spratlys in recent years by building up sand on top of coral reefs. The development was denounced by the United States and other nations that have territorial claims in the area. China has built long airstrips, lighthouses, and radar facilities on the islands over several years. Gregory Poling is director of the center's Asia Maritime Transparency Initiative, or AMTI. He predicted that China will continue military-related construction on the islands. What we're seeing is the most important critical infrastructure going in for air and for defense, he said. Pretty soon, I expect that we'll see deployment of combat aircraft. The apparent addition of arms to the islands shows that China is serious about defending them in case of an armed contingency in the South China Sea, CSIS experts wrote in a report. China's defense ministry released a statement Thursday on its website. It said the construction was mainly for civilian use, but it added that necessary military installations used for defensive purposes are legitimate and lawful. At the State Department, spokesman John Kirby responded to a question about the new report.
There should be no need for militarization of these man-made features, and we're going to continue to make that case at every possible turn.
In the Philippines, Defense Secretary Delphine Lorenzana expressed concern at the new report. If true, it is a big concern for us and the international community who uses the South China Sea lanes for trade, he said. Reuters News Service reported his comments. In the past, the Philippines has objected strongly to Chinese action in disputed areas of the South China Sea. But President Rodrigo Duterte has recently taken a softer position and moved to strengthen ties with China. A top U.S. military official said Wednesday the United States will not soften its opposition to Chinese expansion in the South China Sea. "You can count on America now and into the future," said Admiral Harry Harris Jr., head of the U.S. Pacific Command. Harris was speaking at the Lowy Institute in Sydney, Australia.
"We will not allow the shared domains to be closed down unilaterally, no matter how many bases are built on artificial features in the South China Sea. We will cooperate where we can, but we will be ready to confront where we must."
China's land reclamation projects in the South China Sea have been larger than similar efforts by other countries with claims in the waterway. I'm Brian Lynn.
Back in 1966, a farmer named Nakanti Suba Rao planted a new variety of rice in the southeastern Indian state of Andhra Pradesh. The rice plant is called IR8. It was the creation of scientists at the International Rice Research Institute in the Philippines. Scientists created the IR8 variety by combining a tall rice plant from Indonesia and a shorter version from China. IR8 was the world's first highly productive rice. It is credited with having prevented famines and providing food for millions of people. Agricultural experts say IR8 rice is partly responsible for the Green Revolution, which began in the 1940s and continued through the 1960s. During this period, farmers increased their use of man-made fertilizers and pesticides and irrigation systems to water crops. Food production sharply increased and helped prevent widespread hunger. India and the International Rice Research Institute have been celebrating the 50th anniversary of IR8 rice, which became known as miracle rice. Farmer Rao, now 80 years old, remembers his surprise when he harvested a shocking 7.5 tons of rice on every hectare. Never before, he said, every farmer feeling very, very, very happy, 100% success. Many Asian countries struggled with food shortages in the 1960s and 1970s. IR8 and other varieties that followed helped increase rice production in Asia by 200%. The increase helped prevent widespread hunger. It transformed agriculture, said Dr. Nafis Mia, the Institute's representative for South Asia. He said the Green Revolution prevented the food crises that happened in those years. It saved millions of lives. After India, IR8 rice was planted in other Asian countries, such as the Philippines, Vietnam, and Cambodia, where rice is the main food for most people. Agriculture experts say that the plant's shorter length made IR8 rice stronger and less likely to fail before harvest time. Even with the rise in food production, the Green Revolution also led to some long-term troubles. As the New York Times reported, crops such as IR8 rice required heavy use of pesticides and chemical fertilizers. This method of agriculture left behind chemical pollution, noted U.S. News and World Report magazine. It also used up a lot of soil nutrients and eventually led to soil depletion.
Crops like IR8 also needed more water than natural rainfall offered, so farmers had to irrigate the soil and build wells, NPR noted. In India, this caused the groundwater to sink as much as 1 meter each year. This package of practices was costly, especially for poor farmers. Many of the farmers used credit to buy the products and services, but could not pay back their loans. So they went into debt, lost their land, and were forced to move to crowded cities to find work. After they left, richer farmers bought their land. There was very little work on the larger farms because farmers began turning to tractors and other modern equipment. So human labor decreased, creating high rural unemployment in some areas. Widespread planting of only one or two varieties of rice also reduced biodiversity. In the long term, this can lead to the spread of disease among plants. The methods used during the Green Revolution saved nearly 1 billion people from starvation, according to the New York Times. However, experts are divided on whether the lasting results are more good than bad. Today, food security is still an issue, and not just for Asia. At the same time, malnourishment continues to affect millions of poor people on the continent. And everywhere, farmers are dealing with issues resulting from climate change. Rod Wing is an American scientist at the International Rice Research Institute. He says developing new kinds of rice with more nutrients but less of a harmful effect on the environment can reduce our dependence on gases linked to climate change. The problem, he says, is that the rice must require less water, fertilizer, and pesticides. In recent years, new kinds of rice that are more resistant to dry weather and floods are showing promising results in eastern India and Bangladesh, a country where floods used to cover or wash away crops. A genetically engineered variety of rice has been developed to improve vitamin A levels. Lack of vitamin A kills many children under the age of 5. In addition, researchers are developing crops that keep blood sugar lower and release energy slowly. But the challenge of productivity that IR8 rice fueled remains, noted Wing. The big question is, how are we going to feed 3 more billion people on the planet by 2050? And while some farmers are experiencing larger harvests, they continue to battle other problems. The cost of growing the rice is very, very high now. Labor cost is high, said Farmer Rao. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
From VOA Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. Today, we are going to explore a mysterious word in English that seems to appear and disappear at will. If you are wondering what we mean, consider these examples. One is from a classic American film, Casablanca. The second is from the popular music group Plan B.
Louis, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Now we don't talk and it's a shame. I guess I only have myself to blame. 'Cause girl, you meant so much to me.
Both of these clips have something in common. They leave out the word that. Why did Humphrey Bogart, the main actor in Casablanca, not say, "I think that this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship"? Why did Plan B not sing, "I guess that I only have myself to blame"? In today's Everyday Grammar, we will explore why and when English speakers leave out the word that from a sentence.
The word that can have several meanings in the English language. Sometimes it can be used to indicate an object or a person, as in the sentence, "That man is very nice." Other times, the word that is used to introduce a second clause to a sentence. You might hear someone say, "I think that English grammar is difficult." It is this use of that often confuses English language learners. Today, we are studying the word that in a noun clause. A clause is a group of words that has a subject and a predicate. In other words, it could stand on its own as a sentence. When a group of words could be a complete sentence, we call it an independent clause. "I love English grammar," or "I hate English grammar," are two examples of independent clauses that function as complete sentences. However, sometimes a clause depends on other clauses in a sentence. It cannot stand on its own as a sentence. When this is the case, we say that the clause is dependent. One type of dependent clause is the that clause. It acts as a noun in the sentence. It often follows common verbs like think, say, or guess, and all of the verbs that are synonyms of these verbs, like believe, admit, remind, and so on. Here is an example.
I think that learning English is fun.
In the sentence, the main clause is I think, and the that clause gives more information about the main clause. It is in these types of clauses, clauses that give more information about the main clause, that English speakers often leave out the word that. One reason that they drop the word that from these sentences is because the word that adds little information. So, in a conversation, you are more likely to hear, I think learning English is fun, than, I think that learning English is fun.
There is not really a rule about when to leave out the word that from a that clause. It is a stylistic choice. Conrad and Biber are two English grammar experts. They say there are three general characteristics that usually go along with leaving out the word that from a sentence. The first characteristic is that the main clause has the verb say or think. So, when a speaker begins a sentence with I think, or he thought, or some other use of say, you are less likely to hear the word that. This explanation tells you why Humphrey Bogart, in the famous film Casablanca, said, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship, instead of, I think that this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship. The second characteristic of sentences that leave out that is the subject of the that clause is the same as the main clause. This explanation tells you why Plan B sang, I guess I only have myself to blame, instead of, I guess that I only have myself to blame. The subject of the main clause, I, is the same as the subject of the that clause, I. The third characteristic of sentences that leave out that is as follows. The subject of the that clause is a personal pronoun. You might hear a teacher say, I knew he didn't do his homework, for example. The subject of the main clause is I, and the subject of the that clause is the personal pronoun, he.
All of these characteristics are less common in writing. You are more likely to find a complete that clause in fiction and newspapers, and most likely to find it in academic writing. You are least likely to hear it in conversation. These characteristics of language can be difficult to learn. However, with time and practice, you will begin to recognize how native speakers leave out parts of the language. Understanding that words, such as that, are sometimes left out of a sentence will also help you read and understand English better. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.